Hello, this is Matt with Start 9.
And this is Gary Leland, and you're listening to episode 141 of the Crypto Cousins Podcast.
Feed your interest in Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies by joining Hall of Fame podcaster Gary Leland on the Crypto Cousins Podcast. And remember, we are all cousins in the world of crypto. This week's price of Bitcoin.
$9,444. That's down $337 or 3.5% over the last 7 days. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Matt, welcome to the show. I say that every week. Howdy, 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 and welcome to the show. I'm going to have to come up with something new. How are you doing, dude?
Howdy, howdy, howdy. I'm doing good, Gary. How are you? It's good to see you again.
It's nice to see you. We met at Tone Vey's Unconfiscatable Conference in Vegas. You know, he barely got that in before everything got shut down. I think that had been 3 weeks later, he'd have been shut down.
One week later. It was already out at the time, but it hadn't quite hit the tipping point of fear. But the virus definitely was an issue during that conference, just not a big one.
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about it at that conference. I was seeing that it was, and you know, it's funny, my wife and I talk all the time because I was showing her posts on YouTube that I was seeing of videos in China and stuff of this post, but I didn't even dawn on me that it would be coming over here. You know, I just knew it was happening and badly over there, you know, but I didn't even think about it because she keeps going, I can't believe we weren't any more prepared than that. Not that I know how prepared we could have been.
It was very disruptive, but yeah, we snuck that conference in right at the last second. So,
and you had a booth there for your Start 9, but before we get into Start 9, how about just give us a little background on yourself?
So prior to Start 9, I was the CTO at Salt Lending. Salt Lending is a cryptocurrency backed lending platform. So essentially a bank that will lend you fiat currency while holding cryptocurrency, predominantly Bitcoin, as collateral. I joined that company just post their utility token ICO as their first developer hire. And from there, hired Keegan McClelland, who is now one of my partners, whose then younger brother, Aiden McClelland, came on to Salt, who's also now one of my partners. And together, we built Salt's engineering stack along with many others. But, you know, from an architectural standpoint, Keegan and I took care of a lot of that earlier work. And Salt ended up with a very nice technological stack. And I think that they're doing plenty of loans these days as well. We later brought on Aaron Greenspan, who's also now one of my partners. So that rounds out the four of us. And he was working at Salt as well. Eventually, all four of us moved on to do what we're doing now, which is Start 9. Prior to Salt, I have experience in a variety of industries, actually. I grew up in a bagel bakery doing wholesale bread and bagels. And then after that, I was in plastics recycling, founded a company in Colorado with my brother to do industrial plastics recycling, which I eventually moved on from. And he has continued to do and is now the largest recycler of plastics materials in the mid-continent. On a monthly basis, does, I think, about 1 million pounds of plastics a month. This is shredding, grinding, melting. So my background is quite diversified, but only recently more in the detailed cryptography space.
Well, it sounds like you took a lot of the people who worked for you or with you from Salt with you when you left.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say I took them with me. It's that we all moved on, right? Salt, you know, was doing its thing, and we had built some nice technology there, and ultimately, you know, it wasn't for us. And, you know, we were really wanting to do what we're doing now. You know, Salt is a centralized institution, right? It's essentially a bank. And while the technology that underpins it was very interesting to us, the idea of being a bank was not. We very much are in the business of, you know, fighting the banks and implementing a decentralized financial system and communications infrastructure.
Well, you've come out with Start 9, which is basically... Well, I guess that's the company name. Is the device called a Start 9?
No, the device is now called the Embassy.
The Embassy. Yeah, I knew that. I knew I was calling it the wrong thing.
When you bought it, it was called the S0 personal server, the zero being the prototype version, right? But no, we've rebranded. It's the Embassy, and the Embassy runs our operating system, which we call Ambassador, right? And Ambassador lives in an embassy. So that made sense to us, and we think it's pretty cool.
And it's basically a Raspberry Pi. That's the core of it, I guess.
That's the board, correct. Yeah, we're not particularly hardware people. I mean, we're not dummies either. Our mantra as a company is keep the hardware boring, stupid. Hardware doesn't need innovation right now. I mean, I shouldn't say that. Hardware needs innovation, but we are not innovating in hardware. right? We were trying to be as commoditized and boring on the hardware front as possible. Our value proposition comes in with Ambassador OS, our application offerings, and really, mostly, the way that we pull it all together into a seamless user experience, right? We are bringing decentralized applications and platforms and protocols and technologies to the average person, right? My mother is running an embassy that runs a Bitcoin full node and Cups Messenger, and she couldn't tell you what a command line is.
Well, I'm running all that, and I can't tell you what a command line hardly is either.
So it works.
Yeah, so it works. So tell us about the whole concept of what we're doing here with the embassy and the ambassador software and the Cups. We got a lot of stuff to go through here. Where do you want to start?
Well, I could just do the embassy elevator pitch.
Yeah, let's do that real quick. I've set up the Casa node. I've set up the HODL node. This is the easiest thing I've set up yet, by far. I mean, not by a little bit, by a mile. I mean, right. I plugged it in. It beeped. I hooked it up to my router. Downloaded an app on iTunes or on the App Store, put in the number that was printed on the bottom of my embassy, and I updated the app, updated the embassy, and I was in business. I mean, this was the easiest thing by far I've ever set up.
Yeah, that was our goal. That's our value proposition. Again, it's not the hardware. Some people see what we're selling and they go, oh, I could put a Raspberry Pi in a box and sell it too. And I said, you haven't really looked, right? 8 months of four developers cranking on something, I mean, night and day. And we're decent too. Does not result in a Raspberry Pi in a box. We built a computing platform. So the Embassy elevator pitch, right? So the Embassy is a plug and play personal server that is geared towards the non-technical individual. What it does is you plug it into your wall, you claim it, right? And this is a cryptographic key exchange process where your phone is locally, you know, spinning up a cryptographic key pair in the form of a mnemonic phrase, just like you would a Bitcoin wallet, right? It's going to spit out 12 words. In fact, you could bring your own 12 words, right? As long as you are BIP39 compliant, you can bring your 24-word seed phrase or 12-word seed phrase to our product. So you don't need to trust us to even generate these seed phrases. But anyway, once you've generated this phrase, you can now claim your physical embassy device over the local area network of your home. So the device plugs into your router. You can now discover it in the same way that you would discover a wireless printer and claim it. And by claiming it, you're registering a public key onto the device. The private key lives on your phone and is backed up by a mnemonic phrase, which you go shove in some safe somewhere. So now you are the sole owner, master of this hardware device that's sitting in your home. Great. So now you have a Raspberry Pi running on your home network that is claimed by you, your phone. And what are you going to do with it? So what you do is you can go to our hosted app repository, and this is the sort of singular point of trust in our entire infrastructure right now, but it is not a critical one and will be decentralized and trustless in the near future. We're working towards that, right? Another one of our mantras is that you do not need to trust us. We are not trying to be the trusted company. We're trying to make it so that you don't have to trust any companies. Now that you have claimed this device, you go to the hosted app repository and you can browse and install apps. Apps, in this sense, we're actually starting to call them mods now because apps has got a little bit of a conceptual collision with things that you put on your phone, and it's not what these things are, right? These are server apps, modules, things that you install onto a server. And the first three apps that we put on the App Store or mods are Bitcoin, a Bitcoin Core full node, Bitwarden, which is a self-hosted password manager, similar to LastPass, except you are running your own server such that all your passwords are not stored on somebody else's third-party server. You're hosting them all on your physical device. And lastly, Cups Messenger, which is our own messaging protocol that utilizes the Tor network. We utilize Tor for a lot of things to relay messages from person to person. So if I want to message you, instead of that message being encrypted on my device, sent to some central server, and then relayed to you, and then decrypted, right, which is what most encrypted messaging apps offer today, where you are trusting that middleman to not only, you know, not have a back door, but also, you know, they are persisting those messages indefinitely. So you are trusting them with both the data and the access to that data. Whereas with Cups, you know, it encrypts it on my device. My device sends it to my embassy, my device meaning my phone. My phone sends it to my embassy. My embassy is what stores it so that I can view it later and from all my other devices. my embassy sends it to your embassy, where it also gets stored so that you can view it from all your devices in the future. And then your embassy sends it to your phone, right? So it's me to my embassy to your embassy to your phone. You and I are now talking. There's no middlemen involved. And everything is relayed over the Tor network and encrypted end to end. There are also no exit nodes involved in this process, which means you are not, you know, subject to the vulnerability that the Tor network has regarding exit nodes. All traffic stays on Tor. Nothing leaves.
You also told me, though, because the scenario you just gave me is we both are using cups and we both have embassies. But if I remember correctly, you told me in Vegas that I could be talking to someone who didn't have an embassy or cups. It's just that only my end would be encrypted, where their end would be unencrypted.
Right. I remember that. That was regarding email. So if you wanted to send an email, right, your end would be all sort of private. But if you're sending that email to someone who has a Gmail address, okay, then that end of the communication line is still subject to the inspection of the Google email bots.
So that was cups. It wasn't cups. I was confusing it.
Correct. Yeah, that was just a general conversation about email. Email's hard. Right, email we will be able to do, but there are, you know, concerns and challenges with email that are unique to that protocol. It's very old; it predates most of the internet infrastructure today, and so it's very hard to adapt to things like Tor. Cups, however, to address your point, will be in the near future usable by people who do not have an embassy in a couple of ways. So, first of all, anyone can run Cups. It's open source software. You don't need an embassy from Start9 to run Cups. You can go get the code from GitHub, compile it from source. It's not easy, right? It requires technical expertise, and run it on your own MacBook or VPS hosted on DigitalOcean or whatever you want, whatever degree of trust you're willing to do. Cups is just a messaging protocol. However, we are implementing a feature called guest accounts on Cups, where if you say you have an embassy and you want to chat with your friend who does not have an embassy, and is also not technical enough to go set up Cups on their own and doesn't want to buy an embassy because they don't see the value, but you still want to talk to them using Cups, you will be able to give them your Cups address, just like you'd give them your Cups address if you wanted to chat with them, right? So you give them your Cups address, and then you give them an invite code, right? A one-time password invite code. Now they can actually log in to your embassy using this guest password. Obviously, they don't have full access to the embassy, just and create a Cups account that is only capable of talking to you.
I see.
Right. So now you can just fill up your contact list with all your friends, send out these little invite codes. They go get the Cups app from the App Store or Google Play Store or just the Tor browser, right? Put in your address, put in their OTP. They can then change their password to whatever they want. And now you can talk to all your friends over Cups, and not one of them owns an embassy except for you. However, they are all trusting you now. You have all the data. You are the server now, right? So they're all logging in with you. So if your embassy goes down, goes offline, or you just decide to take all those chats and publish them everywhere, all these people are trusting you. You are now the trusted third party.
Okay. Okay. But that's not available yet.
No.
Okay. But Cups is your newest. That's the newest thing you've released.
Yeah.
I mean, that's your new thing that's out. So y'all are still...
Cups... The server has been around for a while, but like most things with the embassy, it was very hard to use these apps, right? So phase one of Start9 as a company was to make running a personal server and installing open decentralized protocols and applications easy for the average person. We did that. We had that done back in February. You saw it.
Yeah.
You plugged it in, you hit install, and boom, you're running a full Bitcoin node over Tor. Didn't require any expertise at all.
None at all. I mean, it took me, like I said, it took minutes. I mean,
yeah. The problem then was, what do I do now? That was the question people put out to us. They, okay, I got Bitcoin running on my own embassy in my own living room. How do I use it? I got Cups running, right, on my embassy in my living room. How do I use it? Well, phase two of Start9 is to make all of the applications running on your embassy, these background processes, usable from client applications. These are apps that you could put on your iPhone or Android phone, and more predominantly, PWAs, progressive web applications, meaning that you can use the Cups instance on your server. You can use the engine, right? The Cups engine, simply by going to a Tor browser or Firefox browser and plugging in the Onion URL of your Cups instance. So you don't need to go to the Google Play Store or the App Store to use our apps. It's convenient. It's nice to have those icons on your phone, but all you really need is a Tor browser. So there's no way to stop this. Even if Apple was just like, screw it, you're not allowed to have cups on the App Store, we'd go, okay, just go use the Tor browser.
Right. So cups will be improving. That's y'all's new project. That's what y'all are working on a lot. There's a lot of things that are going to happen to make that easier and better and more useful.
Yeah. It's going to get better. It's not our focus. Our primary kind of initial trajectory as a company, as a niche computer company, is Bitcoin and Bitcoin-related technologies, right? So coming soon is going to be an Electrum personal server. That one-click install, now you're running an Electrum personal server on your embassy. Next is coming Lightning, right? See, Lightning will be shortly after that.
Do you have any timelines estimated for those?
No. We do internally, but I don't like to communicate that.
No, that's fine. I didn't know if you were going, yeah, we're definitely going to have it by this date. So
we like to build, launch, and then announce. Cups is important to us, though, not because we think everyone's going to be using Cups in the future as their primary messaging app. Cups is important to us because it is a demonstration. It was a sandbox of sorts, right? That we are not a Bitcoin node, right? We too often get confused as something like a MyNode BTC or a Casa node, which is no longer in production, but right, which are great products, but they are Bitcoin nodes and Lightning nodes, right? They are designed to be plug and play. You plug it into the wall and boom, you have a Bitcoin node running, right? We are a computer company. We are a computing platform, right? For all sorts of applications and decentralized protocols that have been traditionally very difficult to run, right? Everything from, I mean, take Bitwarden, just a password manager. You can't do Bitwarden on your plug-and-play Bitcoin node, right? Those are very bespoke products to Bitcoin. Bitcoin is at the center of our culture, of our ethos, and our product roadmap, but we are a generalized computer company, and Cup is a demonstration of that.
So let's go over real quick. Now, when you say Bitcoin Core, we talked about that. We hooked up. That's a pruned version of Bitcoin Core. I guess that's why it uploads so quickly or updates so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, we by default set pruning quite high, right? Because our physical devices that we're selling don't have a lot of storage, right? We're selling devices with 128 gigabytes of storage. That can't even fit the whole blockchain. But it's not like we prune just to accommodate the storage. It's that we prune because there's very few reasons to run a full archival Bitcoin node, right? The average person does not need every block and every transaction that has ever happened. They just need to validate them. Right, we start at Genesis, it syncs the entire blockchain, but as it goes, it throws out the data that it doesn't care about, right? Which a full Bitcoin node, it's still a full Bitcoin node, it's just not a full archival node. That's the difference. A full Bitcoin node can be very heavily pruned. And what it does is it allows you to process and relay transactions, it allows you to validate transactions, it allows you to validate blocks, it allows you to broadcast your own transactions, and allows you to do all of this in privacy. The average person will never notice the difference between a pruned Bitcoin node and an unpruned Bitcoin node. They don't, right? And it's more scalable too.
Well, it sure uploads a hell of a lot faster than a full node, that's for damn sure.
Well, the sync process is still going to take a while, right?
It didn't seem to take very long to me, not to what it was like on the Casa.
And we don't do pre-synced either, right? We don't believe in shipping somebody a pre-synced blockchain for the sake of convenience. It's like, if you can't wait, you know, a few days for your node to sync, you got a patience problem. Like, this is real privacy, and, you know, got to be a little patient.
So right now we have the Core, we have the Bitwarden. We have cups. Yeah, planned lightning.
Lightning's coming. Yep.
And then
Electrum is coming. Lightning's coming. BTC Pay server is on our roadmap. And then we have a whole suite of sort of non-Bitcoin related applications, including messaging protocols. So Matrix is one that's front and center on our radar. Matrix is a messaging protocol that allows for, you know, group chats, video conferencing, peer-to-peer chats, and it's very robust. We use it internally. We use the Synapse implementation of Matrix and the front-end clients. I think we use Riot to communicate internally as a team, and it's all self-hosted, right? So we try to walk our walk and not use hosted services whenever it is practical to do so. Obviously, we are currently using hosted services. We use Shopify to sell embassies. And that's not something that we like or are going to be doing for very long, but it was expedient, right? It allows us to ship product very quickly without having to take the time to set up our own payment rails and infrastructure. However, we are setting up currently our own BTC Pay server. For instance, you'll be able to buy embassies with Bitcoin in the coming days.
So since we're going there, how are they selling? Are you happy? Are you sad or about what you expected? Or
it's about what we expected, actually. So the numbers, there's, you know, full transparency here. We launched a prototype, right, which are engraved, an inaugural edition of the prototype.
I think mine has that. It has the number on it.
Yeah, you're pretty low too. You were one of the very first buyers.
Like 30 or something, I think.
Yeah. And so we did 1 through 100 of the initial prototype, and those are almost gone. We have, I think, a couple dozen left. So 25 of those are left. And so we've sold, what, 70, 75 units so far.
What do those sell at?
200 apiece. So we're significantly under the market for a full Bitcoin node, right? I'm not sure exactly what the prices are out there, but I know they get as high as like $600, $700, some of them. And so we're very under the market, and we do the same thing. And 10 times more.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have a lot more features for a lot less money.
Yes. So the price point is not going to stay that low. We came in low because people were taking a risk on an unknown product, which we further incentivized by doing the numbered edition. Because if we do our job and things go well, who knows? Maybe they'll be worth something someday. So we wanted to incentivize our early users, our alpha users, really, to buy one of these. So we put the price point really low. We don't make a dime on them. And we engraved them. And we asked for honest feedback and a gentle hand. Right. And we got that. And we have been very, very happy with this sort of initial rollout of a very radical product that has almost no comparison in the world. And so now we're sort of entering phase two, right? Following the sellout of the initial 100 units will be a new device that we have yet to unveil. It is not our sort of flagship product that will be coming next year, which will be a much bigger and cooler unveil. Wait till you see what that looks like. But the sort of, we'll call it the V1.5 is coming very soon. We'll be selling that in the meantime before the major product flagship comes out next year. Price points will be a lot higher, by the way.
Than what you have right now.
For the flagship one, yes.
Yeah.
It does a lot more.
Where would people go to see, would they just go start9.com if they want to see these or interested in buying these?
Start9labs.com.
Start9labs.com. So y'all ship them right out. I mean, you have them in stock.
Yeah, we have the remaining, you know, inaugural editions ones ready to roll. We usually ship them within an hour or two of an order.
So you got like 15 left or something?
Like 20, 25.
Okay, so, you know, if you get 25 orders in the next month, you out of business till the new one comes out?
Oh, no. No. We're ready to ship the 1.5 right now, too.
Okay.
Yeah, no. Again, we're boring hardware, right? The 1.5 is all commodity stuff. Nothing custom made. The V2 is going to be the real flagship product. And that's a 2021 launch date, right? Sometime next year.
Now, you're going to be showing these at you've got a table at BitBlock Boom.
Yep.
So people come into BitBlock Boom will be able to see these. And for those who are not aware, BitBlock Boom is a Bitcoin conference I put on in Dallas. This will be our third year. It's going to be really great. Gosh, we probably would have been sold out already if it hadn't been for those 2 months that tickets stopped selling, because people didn't know what was going on. But now they've started selling like crazy again, because I think that everybody realizes down here in Texas, we're like, I think our restaurant started 75% occupancy starting Friday. So we're pretty much back on track. We were 50 for a while, but that's, if you're interested, anyone's interested in BitBlock Boom, it's a Bitcoin conference. It's not an altcoin conference. All we talk about is Bitcoin and Bitcoin applications. You can find out more about it at bitblockboom.com. Check it out. But also, like I said, you'll be able to, Matt and his crew will be there. They'll have a table set up showing the, will you have the Start 9 and the new one there by then, or?
The 1.5 will be there for sure. We're going to sell out of the prototypes.
Yeah, you'll be out of I didn't mean to start mine, the embassy.
Yeah, we're starting to get some recognition right now. And that, again, by design. We weren't hiding. Like, we understand. I've had enough startups. Right? This is my fifth startup and experience to know that you don't just, we're not a marketing company, right? We want sales to scale with the quality of the product and not any faster, not any slower either. It's starting to curve a little bit. So we're going to sell out. We'll be selling the 1.5 at BitBlock Boom. The inaugural editions will be gone. And we are really looking forward to this conference, Gary. I mean, everyone's been cooped up and there is a hunger to get after it. And I think you are going to be the first major Bitcoin conference. You're going to hockey stick.
Yeah, I think we'll be the first one for sure that's in person. We've got us our platinum sponsor this year. We've got another sponsor I was talking to today. So all of a sudden people are contacting me where last year, our second year, I couldn't get a platinum sponsor. I could hardly get anyone to talk to me. but we did real good last year and everybody was real excited about it this year. And now, I still think it's funny. Matt Odell posted, Gary's going to look like a genius posting a conference in August in then hot as hell, Texas. But it turns out to be the greatest timing of all times, maybe.
Yeah, no, I think this is going to be the conference. This is going to be the one you're going to hockey stick towards in the last month leading up to it.
Yeah, you know, the thing about it is if you're really into Bitcoin, you're around people who are into what you're into. I mean, you know, you don't have, you know, these sections that are in the one thing or sections in the other thing. And, you know, maybe they're, and it's not a gigantic conference of 2,000 people where it's just such a nightmare to go to. You know, it's a nice size conference. Everybody is, sounds corny to say top notch, but they really are. They're good people that are there. Everybody's into the same thing at a high level. And we have a great group of speakers that like coming to our event, you know. So, but I don't want to get on my event. That wasn't the goal there. I just wanted to do a little mention there. So tell me what else we want to talk about with Start 9, because this is your chance to tell me stuff about it. I want to make sure I get out everything about the embassy, Start 9. I mean, I want to tell people what they need to know. So I think it's a great idea to make a personal server instead of just a node that runs a Bitcoin node.
There is still a lack of understanding as to the magnitude of the technological transformation taking place on Earth right now that was started by Bitcoin, right? Even Bitcoiners do not fully understand the depth of the change here. And I use that lightly because some do, but nobody fully grasps the magnitude of the tectonic shift that's taking place here. We believe that what we are doing is a natural extension of the movement started and that continues to be led by Bitcoin and will always be, by the way. Bitcoin is the beating heart. It is the battle cry of this revolution, but it needs help, right? Even heroes need support. We're building that infrastructure, right? Start 9 is not a node company. We are not a chat company. We are a computer company, right? We are building personal devices, not one per home, one per person. Everyone has a phone in their own pocket. Families don't share phones, right? They don't share phones because everyone wants to be on it at the same time. Everyone wants the sort of privacy that comes along with having your own chat history. You don't want your parents going through your stuff, right? So these are a personal device, and it is your gateway to and sovereign territory in the internet, the new internet, right? And it's necessary for Bitcoin to survive. If we don't have full node operators in abundance, Bitcoin is vulnerable. The full user and economic nodes are critical to the health of the network. Take messaging, for instance. Bitcoin is vulnerable if you and I are messaging on iMessage and I say, hey, send me some Bitcoin. And you go, okay, I'll send you some Bitcoin. Bitcoin can be as private as it wants to be, but if that message is not private, then we are still subject to the physical dangers associated with, you know, interrogation or, right, like the whole thing is private or none of it is private. Any crack or vulnerability in the communications and digital infrastructure is a vulnerability to not just Bitcoin, but to human liberty, right, to freedom, which privacy is a necessary prerequisite. So we are a computer company with privacy as an uncompromising core principle. You will not need to trust us for this to work. Currently, there's a little bit of trust. There won't be.
Well, let's go 5 years in the future. What do we see coming from you guys and where will y'all be in the space? What do you foresee as Start 9's place in 5 years?
Do you have security cameras in your home? Do you have a smart doorbell and a smart thermostat?
No, not a smart thermostat, but I do have, I have a camera at the door, but not a smart doorbell.
How about like an Alexa or a Google Home speaker?
Yes, definitely.
Is Alexa listening, Gary?
Yeah, well, not now, not in my office here, but it sure as shit is at home because it comes on sometimes and says, I didn't understand what you said. No one was talking to you, bitch.
Right. And the cameras is Nest watching, right? So here's the danger that we're getting ourselves into right now as a world. As the Internet of Things comes into play, as hardware devices become more prominent in our lives, the data that is, right, the sensors on those things and the data that is collected are dangerous, potentially dangerous, right? I know a lot of people who don't have cameras in their homes or own an Alexa simply because it feels like an invasion of privacy. The idea that there's a hardware device in my home that has a direct connection to Google servers and is listening to everything that I say is, quite frankly, unacceptable, right? It's scary. And most people don't recognize the repercussions of that because it hasn't been leveraged against us in a severe manner yet, right? But go ask some people, you know, in less fortunate regimes than America, if, you know, if they're afraid of their, you know, of corporations or governments spying on them in their homes. And it's much more of a concern. And who knows what America is going to look like in the next few decades, right? We don't want to take that risk. We want to build technology and infrastructure that protects the individual, regardless of the political future. And so that's the direction that we are going in, right? There will come a day in the next 5 years where you will be able to buy a camera, either a open source hardware camera off the shelf or directly from Start9. You'll be able to put it up on your ceiling. You'll be able to walk up to that camera with the same phone that you use to register your embassy and tap it to the camera. That's the setup process. You will walk up to the camera, you will tap your phone to it, the phone will give a little vibration, and the camera will wake up, recognize you as its master, and immediately find all of its brothers and sisters on the distributed internet using their Tor addresses, because that information was passed using the public keys from which we derive the public addresses, okay? So I tap my camera with my phone, and suddenly the camera knows that it has a sibling in the other room, which is monitoring that room, that it has a doorbell outside, that it has a little drone flying around the house, that the embassy is the sort of brain of the whole operation, which is storing the majority of the data. However, it's also sharing that data with other embassies around the world in encrypted shards, right, using Lightning Network for micropayments, okay? We envision a future where human beings, individuals, have entire fleets of IoT devices, drones and otherwise, serving them on a very personal level with no third parties or trust involved whatsoever. If I buy a little vacuum cleaner, that little vacuum cleaner should not be uploading data to Google. It should be uploading data to my embassy in my living room, which then stores backups on my mom's embassy, totally encrypted and broken up, by the way, all serving my needs.
Well, that sounds pretty interesting. So no longer will anyone have your information, the size of your house inside, where your furniture is, what you're saying, what you're doing, where you've been. It'll all be just on your personal server.
And guess what? You don't need a blockchain for it.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't need a blockchain for a lot of things.
Personal army, robot armies of the future will not need a blockchain. Yeah. All they will need is Bitcoin and the Lightning Network for micropayments.
Very good.
The short and the long of it, right? The short term, we're a plug and play Bitcoin full node, push a button, you're running a full Bitcoin node pruned and over Tor, push another button, you're running a private messaging protocol without any third parties. That's the short term, right? The long term, tap your phone to a security camera and get your home monitored without trusting a single person on earth.
And this is at start9labs.com?
Yeah.
Yeah, so take a look at it. And it was pretty impressive, the display at Tone's Confiscatable. Yeah, I was pretty impressed with it. And like I said, I picked one up and set it up. It took me a while to get around to setting it up, but I did. But it takes me a while to do any damn thing, it seems like, and find the time. Also, like I said, you can find them at BitBlockBoom. Where can people follow you at or follow Start9Labs if they want to keep up with what you guys are doing?
Twitter. Twitter is the main, you know, access point. We also have a mailing list, which you can subscribe to at the main website. But yeah, I mean, Twitter at Start9Labs. Is where you're going to get the conversations and the announcements. It's a very new Twitter handle. We don't have a lot of followers. Like I said, we have not been a marketing first company, but it's coming time. We're starting to get out there.
I appreciate what you said in the pre-talk we were having. If y'all had sold 5,000 of these earlier in the year, you'd had 4,950 people who wouldn't like what they had.
Yeah.
Because you weren't ready for those kind of numbers.
No. We want to deliver. Our customers are happy. We want to keep them that way, right? I mean, we're in the hardware business. That's not easy. Hardware is hard, which is why we want to be boring on the hardware front, at least for now, and ship software. We're a software company.
But this isn't your first rodeo either, though. So, I mean, as far as creating a company from scratch, so that helps you too, just that you have that experience of going through this before.
Yeah, we're being prudent. Measured steps, slow growth, and you know what? We will, if it starts to curve on us, we'll handle it.
Okay. Well, Matt, thanks for coming on the show. I look forward to seeing you again at BitBlockBoom. Follow Matt, follow Start9Labs, check out the start9labs.com. Thanks, Matt. I appreciate it.
Can't wait for the conference, Gary.
I hope you've enjoyed today's show, and I want to give a big thank you to all my cousins out there for listening and subscribing. If you haven't subscribed yet, just go to CryptoCousins.com, and you'll see the links for all the places you can subscribe. You may want to take a second and leave a great review or a 4-star rating even while you're at it. I also recommend you go to CryptoPodcaster.com and see all my other podcasts and websites for the world of Bitcoin. There's a lot of them to look at.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Cousins podcast. Please share the show with your friends. They can subscribe by going to CryptoCousins.com/subscribe. And if you want to know more about Gary, just go to GaryLeland.com. Make sure and join Gary and all the Crypto Cousins every week for a new episode of the Crypto Cousins podcast. The Crypto Cousins podcast and the information included in the podcast are not intended as investment advice. Investing in any cryptocurrency is risky, and you should never invest more than you can afford to lose. Always seek professional advice before investing in any cryptocurrency. Please understand, you are using any and all information from the Crypto Cousins at your own risk.